Hello, good morning. Welcome and thank you for joining us. My name is Cindy Fazio. Today is March 29th, 2016, and this is the public hearing on the proposed amended rules under the Uniform Money Services Act, Chapter 19.230 of the Revised Code of Washington, and Chapter 208-690 of the Washington Administrative Code. I was designated by the Director of the Division of Consumer Services as the presiding officer for this hearing. We have a number of attendees in the room. Please make sure you have signed the sign-up sheet. If you did not put your address or email address, please make sure you do that so that we can continue to provide you with all the rulemaking documents during this process. Those documents will include the memorandum summarizing today's hearing and the concise explanatory statement that details the comments we received during the rulemaking process and our responses to those comments. All rulemaking documents and the audio recording of today's hearing are on our rulemaking webpage, and we have received some comments here just very recently as yesterday, and we're in the process of getting those up on our website, so we'll definitely have the rest of the comments from today up by the end of the week, so you can take a look at those. This hearing on the proposed amended rules to implement the Uniform Money Services Act is called to order at 10:09 a.m. on March 29, 2016. The purpose of this hearing is to receive public comments on the proposed rules that have been drafted. DFI will continue to consider all comments received until 5 o'clock p.m. on April 15, 2016. So we have extended the comment period on this particular rulemaking when we had received notice of the rule of the comments that were going to be coming in. We decided to extend that period a little bit. So again, the comment period is extended until 5 o'clock p.m. on April 15, 2016. The proposed rule was filed with the code reviser as the CR 102 on February 15, 2016, and published in the Washington State Register at WSR 16-05-068 on March 2, 2016. We are amending the existing rules to benefit the regulated industry by having clear and consistent rules, including taking into account innovations in the industry, informing the industry of obligations under state and federal law, and providing a tiered net worth structure based on volume and business type to better accommodate differently sized businesses and business models. DFI has received comments on the proposed rules and expects to receive more at today's hearing. The comments are a part of the public record and are available on our website. For those wishing to submit comments until April 15th, you can do so by providing the comments to Sarah Recheck, and I'll give you the fax number to do that, which is 360-586-5068. You can also deliver those comments to the DFI address. You can mail them to the DFI mailing address, and you can send them electronically to Sarah as well. And rather than reading a long email address into the audio, I will say that you can find all of the contact information on our website. Okay, we'll begin the oral testimony. Please state your name, if you are appearing in a representative capacity, who you represent, and whether you are speaking for or against the proposed rule. So, first on the sign-up sheet is Devin Whitney. Devin?
Thank you. Devin Whitney with PayPal, Inc. Somewhere in between for or against, let's say with concerns. Specifically, WAC 208-690-230 in reference to advertising or marketing a trade name. As you saw in our comments that we submitted yesterday, PayPal Inc. does have some concerns with how the department is suggesting we maybe should change making use of a trade name when advertising a different service or trade name underneath the licensee. In particular, the company is most concerned with our ability to use both Zoom and Venmo, which are no longer subsidiaries under PayPal or licensed entities themselves, but are merely products and services within PayPal Inc. as a whole. We dissolved Venmo as a corporate entity last year and are doing the same with Venmo, or Zoom, I'm sorry, right now. Mm-hmm. With Venmo in particular, I think we have gone out of our way to make it clear to our customers that Venmo is indeed operating underneath the PayPal license. If you go to the Venmo webpage, it lists the PayPal license and makes it clear to customers that Venmo is doing business underneath PayPal's license. We also list all of the departments across the country which PayPal has a license on the Venmo webpage. The receipts issued by Venmo make reference to the PayPal license. And I think we have gone out of our way to make it clear to our customers that Venmo is not trying to operate in any other way other than under the PayPal license. I believe it's the department's goal with this proposed change to try and eliminate any sort of deception, subterfuge, or obscuring the fact of who is actually the licensee from consumers. We certainly think that's a laudable goal and share that goal as well. Our concern is having the name of the licensee equally prominent alongside the name of the product service or the trade name, which would diminish the value associated with Venmo. Part of the reason why we kept Venmo as Venmo and did not switch it to PayPal is because there is significant consumer recognition and value derived from that brand. And if we were to have Venmo alongside PayPal in an equally prominent fashion, then we believe that that would cause irreparable harm to our brand. So what we are offering as an alternative is to make sure that it is clear to the consumer and that it is conspicuous that these trade names or these products or services are operating under the license of the actual named licensee, but doing away with the equally prominent language as proposed in the change of rule. That's the extent of our concerns. I believe Alex may have some other ones that he wants to talk about on behalf of Google, but it is our hope that we can arrive at some sort of negotiated solution that would hopefully meet our objectives and those of the DFI, where consumers would not have to wonder or worry about who they're actually doing business with, but also giving businesses that are using a trade name or a different product or service that is perhaps separate from the name on the actual license a little bit more flexibility in how they market and advertise the name of the actual licensee to their customers. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Alex Ketter.
Hi, my name is Alex Ketter. I'm here on behalf of Google Payment Corp. I'm here to read our comments to that address the proposal, and I didn't have to take any questions because they were just submitted this morning, so I'm sure you haven't had a chance to go through them. So throughout this, I'll refer to GPC, or Google Payment Corp as GPC, and the Department of Financial Institutions as DFI. GPC is a licensed money transmitter in Washington State, providing various financial services to its users under the authority of this license. GPC believes that there are many good provisions within the proposed rules, but is open for some clarification and or revisions of the provisions identified below. So again, we're kind of in the middle. Support. We support, in large part, a lot of the efforts, but are hoping for some clarification on some items. Echoing Devin's comments on 208-690-230, we understand that the proposed section would require equal prominence of the licensee's name alongside its trade name on any advertisement. GPC has registered its trade names with the Secretary of State of DFI. By registering these trade names, GPC has made its users and regulators aware of the names under which we operate. GPC also discloses its license name on receipts, on our website, and in other relevant places, albeit in a smaller font, but always in a clear manner that would allow a user requiring assistance to contact GPC. In our view, displaying a license name of equal prominence to a given trade name in all marketing would be extremely burdensome and result in an unappealing and confusing user experience. For example, if we understand the proposed rule correctly, a 48-foot billboard with a simple Android Pay logo in the middle would now have to include an equally large reference to Google Payment Corp alongside it. Apart from the aesthetic deficiencies of such an approach, we expect consumers to be confused about the presence of such a prominent identification of the licensee's official name and to distract from the intended marketing message. For identification, for similar reasons, we believe the requirement would also be problematic in the context of online ads. which are significantly size constrained, especially when viewing on mobile phones. Every word, letter, even down to the pixel, are scrutinized in every single mobile and online ad. GPC respectfully requests removal of the equal prominence provision in this section. Our next section is the revision of the definition of AML compliance officer under WAC 28690010. GPC applauds the DFI for its efforts to regulate the use of third-party consultants serving as licensees compliance officers. GPC respectfully requests a slight change in this section, however, that would allow an employee of an affiliate or a parent company of a licensee to be the compliance officer. As DFI is aware, many licensees establish payment entities in different jurisdictions for the purpose of complying with at times contradicting regulations. In such cases, the compliance officer is typically employed by the licensee's parent company, and that officer maintains oversight of each of the various payment entities. As currently drafted, we would expect that many of your licensees, including GPC, would be unable to comply, as the compliance officer would not technically be employed by the licensee. Regarding WAC 28690-200, GPC respectfully requests definitions of what an electronic funds transfer and an electronic terminal are. Given the nature of some of GPC's products, particularly with regard to payment processing, GPC would not have the ability to change content on merchant receipts. Where applicable, GPC provides a separate receipt via email or a mobile application that could comply with this section. However, GPC cannot control what a merchant displays on its point-of-sale receipt. Regarding section WAC 28690-125, GPC respectfully requests clarification that in this section, the record retention period is what the licensee has set as its record retention period. This would give the licensee flexibility to keep records longer than legally required, but to still destroy the records when it deems necessary. GPC would like to ensure that this provision is not interpreted to require a licensee to dispose of records at a certain time that DFI sets, as licensees are already subject to inconsistent regulations for record retention. Section WAC 28690-240, GPC respectfully requests that certain policies and procedures be permitted to be maintained at the parent level so long as they are adopted by the licensee. For example, there may be certain Google policies related to topics such as cybersecurity, as addressed in this section, that are maintained at the parent company level because they are applicable to our platform and all of our various entities. GPC would like to ensure that such an approach would not run afoul of any requirement that such policies be established and maintained by the licensee as written in this section. GPC gratefully appreciates DFI's consideration of the comments and thanks DFI for the partnership and the rulemaking process. I'm happy to take your questions.
Great. Thank you, Alex.
I believe the way it's written right now says that a licensee must dispose of its record at the end of the record retention period. But it doesn't say at the licensee's record retention period, so we just want to make sure it's not interpreted as like DFI says record retention period should be 5 years, and that section would now mandate us to destroy records at 5 years, whereas our, you know, financial requirements require us to maintain records for 10 years, things like that. So as long as it's at the licensee's record retention period.
Could you get back to us with an operating of how long those records would be held?
I can tell you offhand it's 10 years in general. I believe that's the most, some financial records and things like that are required by our company to be kept for 10 years.
That requires some kind of financial requirements?
And we have certain regulators that require 7 years. So there's like 5, 7, and 10. So we just kind of keep everything in for 10 at this point.
Do you have anything more on the records retention?
No.
Getting back to the equally prominent language, Are either of you proposing that language along the lines of conspicuously disclosed and used in lieu of?
I didn't read you exactly the language that we proposed. If you use a trade name or product name that does not incorporate in whole or in part the name of your license, the advertising using that trade name or product must, taken as a whole, not mislead customers as the entity providing the service.
Thanks for providing that suggested change. That's always helpful.
Happy to do so. Thank you. We also proposed another change at the end that said the name on your license must appear on any agreement you enter with customer on any legally required service. So, okay. And I think it's fair to say that at PayPal, we completely support the spirit of what the DFI is trying to do. We don't believe that customers should be deceived, misled, or that licensees should engage in any sort of subterfuge. We just want to make sure that we have a little bit more flexibility in how we use our trade names, while also making sure that our customers know that the actual licensee is paid out and not vendors.
Do you see the agrees with that?
Okay, I think what I will do is I'm going to turn the recording machine off and we'll wait around for a few more minutes just to see if anybody is going to show up, and if it doesn't appear that anybody else is going to show up, I'll come back on the recorder and adjourn the hearing. So at this point, I will go off the recording. Cindy Fazio again, and it's March 29th, 2016, and this is the hearing on the proposed amended rules to the Uniform Money Services Act, and it's 10:40, and nobody else has arrived at the hearing. So at this point, I'm going to again thank the attendees who came today to present testimony. The comments will be available on the website, and the audio from the hearing will be available on our website as well. So at this point, I will say one more time that we will continue to receive and consider comments through April 15th, 2016. And with that, I will adjourn the hearing. Thank you. Goodbye.